Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 187. Matt and Joan and I, of course, are touring around the country. You probably hear us say that a lot, but it's absolutely true, and that's why we'll keep saying it. If you go to Nerdist.com/calendar, you will see those dates, and then come out and see us live. We have shows continuing through the rest of the year, so if you live in or near a big city, we will probably be coming to or at you sometime soon. Also, please go to youtube.com/nerds, subscribe to the Nerdist channel. We're going to be launching April 2nd. Lots of fun video stuff for your eyes and ears, so go there and subscribe to that. I'd like to thank Audible for supporting the Nerdist podcast. Visit audiblepodcast.com/nerdist for a free audiobook download. Might I recommend Death by Black Hole or The Pluto Files by Neil deGrasse Tyson. Those are books you can get. I don't think he reads those, but that doesn't make them not worth listening to. But I wish he did. I love Neil's voice. Neil deGrasse Tyson has the best voice. Am I right, Katie Levine? So you can't hear her. She's not mic'd.
Yes.
She's nodding fervently. Yes. In case you don't know, Audible is the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment. If you've downloaded an audiobook in the past, chances are it is tied to audible.com. Download them straight to your computer, smartphone, or MP3 player. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from. So support the show by supporting our sponsors, which would be audiblepodcast.com/nerdist. Sign up and get your free audiobook download right now. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is very exciting to me. I have Rob Paulsen and Maurice LaMarche. They're both legendary voice actors, and I've worked with both of them a ton. Rob was a regular on Back at the Barnyard. He played Peck, and Maurice did a bunch of characters here and there on the show. But these guys, I wanted to have them on together because we're all friends. And, you know, when you get these two guys in a room, they are incredible together. They just play off each other. You probably know them as Pinky and the Brain. Maurice was the Brain and Rob was Pinky. And they're just two of my favorite people. I love them to death. And we had so much fun on this episode. So even if you don't know who they are, although you probably should because they have done pretty much every animated show in the history of the last 25 years of animation, then I think you will become huge fans of these guys right afterwards. Rob Paulsen and Maurice LaMarche right here in the Nerdist Podcast episode number 187. #NARF.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Meat and my germs.
This is your, how many podcasts is this now of this one?
This is like 7 million podcasts.
No, we're 170 something. 178. Yeah.
Yeah, we have like 10 more that we haven't released yet. So
good for you, man.
We're fast approaching to the 200 mark.
Well, I'm so impressed.
That is wild.
Oh,
hey
guys.
That is fantastic.
Check it.
Matt, you're leading it. Hey, Robbie, could you scoot over just this way a little bit and move that microphone so Myra can...
No, it's fine.
No, please.
Nick really wants you hovering over him.
No, please, it's my pleasure.
I already was talking about his tacos.
Could you just lean on... Hey, you're talking about Nick's tacos.
They look. They looked delicious.
It sounds. No, it sounds delicious. Adorable.
Hi, I'm Rob, by the way.
Nice. Hi, I'm Nick.
That's Nick.
Nice to meet you.
Hello, this is
Nick.
Maurice.
Mo. Call me Mo. And you are Matt. Matt. How you doing?
Maurice LaMarche.
Hey. Oh, nice to see you.
Maurice LaMarche, French Canadian. Maurice LaMarche.
Hello, you. Right,
I want to separate from the rest of Canada there. Eh? I got a big saw, and I am going to saw away at the...
Maurice is going to secede himself.
I am seceding with his saw. I'm saw-seeding. Hello.
I'm telling you,
we're wasting this year, and now as soon as the red light go on, that's it. No more. I sit here.
That's hit. Like a little creaky.
So, Mo, can we go to you for
wood.
A comment?
You are such a booger eater.
I'm having t-shirts made up. Maurice LaMarche is a sovereign nation.
Hello.
He has his own province.
He has his own gravitational field.
I have never been needed less on a show.
No, these guys, his own area code. This is why I want to have these guys on together.
Yeah, man.
We've already started recording.
Have you?
Rob Paulson, Maurice LaMarche. Jonah is coming back from South by Southwest, but Matt Myra's here.
Oh, yeah.
Nick's over in the corner pulling up clips for the Ryan Seacrest ship program.
Cool.
A lot of crazy news happening today, Nick.
Always.
Yep, of course.
Non-stop.
Anyone die today? Everything okay?
Just my career.
We're looking good.
Okay, good. Not one death in the world.
I was going to say, I mean, if no one died, imagine what that would do to the surface population.
We're just talking about celebrities, though.
Oh,
I mean,
okay,
the people
right.
that
all
really
right,
matter, you
yet,
know.
But we're on the Jessica Simpson baby watch.
Oh, baby watch!
Who's the impregnator?
Does it matter?
I don't know. So
point.
Who
I
got
guess anybody with a pulse? Huh?
Ex-football player boyfriend.
Oh, football player boyfriend. I thought you said
not
RuPaul
her football
at first.
Ex-boyfriend.
RuPaul got Jessica Simpson.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Hey, any second now, that Jessica Simpson's gonna front poop a baby out of her. Let's get a camera on there.
OBGYN officers, the front poop.
You've been present for a birth or two, I see.
Yeah, exactly.
And the afterbirth as well.
Hi, Chrissy.
Robbie Paulson.
This is so great.
This is so much fun.
I'm so proud of you. And to think that, you know, for most people, being the second youngest person to be hired as a greeter at the Hemet Walmart would be enough. But
I've taken it the extra step.
I'm telling you, man, you are just swinging for the fences.
Nothing can hold you back. It's amazing, man.
And don't look at the brightness here.
Stop it, Pinky. We must maintain our disguises as voice actors.
I can't help it. I've wet myself. I'm here with Chris Hardwick, which is actually a great porn name, either way. Hard Chriswick or Chris Hardwick? Hard Chriswick.
Hard Chriswick.
Yeah. I could listen to you guys do that all fucking day.
We can't.
So you do.
You get really tired of it
Monday,
really fast.
But now we can't get a job. Can't get a fucking job.
Did you just say can't?
I said can't with an A.
What is it you can't face?
Don't start with me.
We allowed to swear?
Yeah, swear
really?
It up.
They're going to hear Pinky in the Brain swearing.
Yes.
Oh. This is fun.
How bad, I mean, listen, how dirty could Pinky in the Brain possibly get?
Oh, you have no idea, my friend.
Yeah,
Pinky,
funny.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
Well, I think so, Brian, but if Jimmy cracks corn and nobody cares, why does he keep doing it?
No, you can porn it up now, Pinky.
Oh,
we're
can
on
porn
podcasting.
It up. Well, let's see. Well, if Jimmy cracks fucking corn and nobody cares, why does he keep doing it?
Why the fuck does he keep doing it?
Oh, dear. Well, there goes our chance. There goes our chance at the movie.
Pinky, fuck you. Okay, there we go.
In your dreams,
I've been waiting 108 episodes to say that.
Wanker.
I can't believe they cut that out.
Fucking idiot, Pinky.
I can't believe they cut all that out.
If you could have been, I mean, the outtakes are golden. My God. I spent. Well, it's like with you. I had the pleasure of meeting Chris Hardwick on Back at the Barnyard.
Yep.
They sent us a DVD, or a CD rather, of your miraculous outtakes, most of which, I mean, you do a place in hell now.
It's a special place in the devil's asshole for me.
I mean, it is beautiful stuff, though. It really is beautiful. Like, you farting and making all sorts of...
Me farting? What did you go for? I mean, I did a couple of episodes because I was one of the cows in the movie.
Yeah.
So we brought the cows back only three times, but that's okay.
When I heard it was going as a series,
I went, great, 108 episodes.
No, you were unbelievable on the show.
But what did they call it, the wacky take?
The kooky take? We jokingly called it the wacky take, but it was basically...
That was Odenkirk wanted to do a take after...
Yes, Steve Odenkirk, right.
Right.
They basically, like, we would do a take as written, and then we would do, like, an improvised take.
Right.
And
with the story following the same lines,
pretty much, but
just doing whatever you want.
I mean, a lot of times it devolved into diarrhea jokes, but
well, yeah.
But it really created, like, they had no ego about which jokes like were theirs or which jokes were ours. They just picked the funniest takes.
Well, but the truth is though, when they realized that they had this guy.
Oh yeah.
I mean, then they thought, well, they got to do a crazy take, because honest to God, Chrissy, you'd come up with stuff that was real, and Jed Spingarn, who basically directed
so fucking funny.
The show. But they re- and you wrote several episodes too, right?
I wrote one episode, and then I contributed to a handful of other episodes.
Well, I think you're being self-defacing, as it were. But honest to God, I got to tell you, and I know I got the gig, so I'm already here. But the truth is, folks, you got to hear this. You had been very successful of, you know, the Hard and Firm and stand up and working, and we have the same agent, and I've never had the pleasure of working with Chris. And you know that they brought me in on Back at the Barnyard. They said, would you come in and read with some of the people that were calling back, one of whom was Mr. Hardwick. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Jason
from the Jason
the
movies?
Guy from Arrested Development. Jason Bateman.
Oh, Bateman.
John Cryer, okay? Uh-huh. So Mr. Hardwick comes in. I read with you. And as I started to, you left, and as I started to leave, they said, Robbie, hang on a second. We want you to come in here. What do you think? And I thought, oh, no. Don't do that to me. Don't put me on the spot, because I don't ever, you know, it's hard enough to get a gig. Yeah. I don't want to have the thumbs up or thumbs down like Pontius Pilate, you know? And so then they said, really, what do you think? I said, well, this guy, Chris, is just fucking ridiculous.
Oh, and you guys.
He was. And yeah. I don't know that had anything to do with it. I'm just saying that, honest to God, they slipped me 20.
It had everything to do with it. Chris, you owe him your whole
Yes. But that's what we're here for.
Just thinking, if you'd have gone with Bateman and given Bateman the thumbs up, you'd have been there for all the Bateman auditions.
Oh, no,
Bateman would have been stuck over at Nickelodeon.
Just so they know, though. It was so
And you'd have a movie career.
When you have, you know, when you have a group of people.
I know.
I have such a great respect for the voiceover world, because I, you know, it's a field that a lot of people go, oh, I should make a tape. But it's voiceover work is, it's fun, but it's fucking hard. And what I realized.
Not according to Chris Rock.
No.
According to Chris Rock.
Say this, and then give me $1 million.
Well, all right, look. Yeah. It's easy if you just go in and you just play yourself.
Yeah.
And, right. and with Barnyard.
Or play with yourself
while you're recording, which you can do because no one can see you.
Nobody can see. I've done sessions.
Most of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you were masturbating.
Right. Oh, totally.
During the takes.
I was.
Right?
I worked at a bait shop, in fact. I was a masturbator.
Sorry.
All right. But you're right, and so you kind of go,
like, oh, voiceover's not hard. But then you see guys like you and Mo and Jeff Bennett and these really incredible guys.
Welker.
Frank Welker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
who will come in, and then watching you guys find voices is so much fun. They'll give you direction, man. And you attack with voices from these places where I would always go, where the fuck did he come up with that?
But isn't that the truth, though? And that just happened. My friend, the brain, sitting to my left, you have knocked my brains out on more than one occasion with your incredible gift. I'm telling you, man. You're a genius.
Really?
You're a genius. Here's my hotel room key.
You're very kind.
I remember a young Maurice LaMarche.
Oh. A young Maurice LaMarche.
From the 9th Annual Young Comedians Comedy Special, which I've quoted many times.
I first saw him on TV, the Ronnie Dangerfield.
Ronnie Dangerfield Young Comedian Special.
Yep.
I've mentioned that special many times on this podcast. It was you and Kinnison and Saget and Rita Rudner and Louis Anderson.
Harry Basil, who went on to direct films.
Some guy named Richie Gold that I never heard from again.
Richie Gold, I always wonder what happened to Richie Gold. He had a funny act. He had. I still will say.
God of Duty.
God of Duty.
Yeah.
I will still do God of Duty. Especially, he would just talk about, like, if your pants rolled low, you know, you just look like you got 30.
Because kids can always tell you when they have to take a shit, right. And you can't go into your Bob's and go, hey, boss, can I take a break? Why? Got a duty.
Got a duty.
And Bob Nelson?
Nelson, genius on that. Absolute genius. It was
a
confluence. It was a merging, if you will, of all of the energies of comedy in one night. I mean, you know, Kinnison knocked it out of the park. And I mean, he was the breakout guy. I mean, it was literally the only, his first and only appearance on television at that point. Nobody ever thought he could go on TV.
Wow.
And you know, there was a little revisionist history, I have to say, but since I've got the ears of your listeners, Rodney, I used to be Rodney's opening act, and we were on the bus, and I knew I had my slot because Rodney, you know, just liked me and put me on there. I probably should have waited 2 more years before doing something like that because I didn't think my material was, I didn't quite have the material, but the impressions were good. But anyway, he said, hey, man, I got quite a question for you. I don't know who to put. I got one more slot left on the show. I don't know who to put there, man. Who do you think? And I'm like, well, Rodney, I just think you got to give it to Sam Kinison. He goes, nah, man, Kinison can't cook in 5 minutes, man. I like him, but he's only got 5 minutes. You know, his first joke, he alienates the shit out of him, and then he needs to get him back. He spends 20 minutes getting him back on his side. They walk out of the club. I said, Rodney, I'm telling you, Sam has got an opening joke that hooks them right in. It was the 7-Eleven joke.
Right.
He just started using it.
Yeah, exactly. What's the 7-Eleven joke?
The 7-Eleven joke was where Sam would go, sorry I'm late. I would have gotten here on time, but I had to stop 7-Eleven and go, Marlboro! Marlboro! Cigarettes! Smokey, Smokey! I should have shot your ass in the neck when I had the chance!
Yeah, it's so funny.
Okay, you see the effect it's having on you right now?
Shit.
So
that was his opening joke.
He won them with that joke.
That was his opening joke.
They knew everything they needed to know about Sam in that opening bit.
That just hurt me.
Yeah. And so I said, I'll tell you how much I believe in Sam, Rodney. I would give up my spot if there were no spots left, I would say to you, I'll give up my spot on the show. Give it to Sam Kinison. I'll do the show next year. And my wife, who wasn't my wife, she was just my girlfriend at the time, like, swatted
now
me.
Ex-wife.
Because she realized too late
asshole.
She married a moron.
You got to make a living.
It's exactly what she said. She said, are you an idiot? You don't go out on a limb like that for another performer. But I do because I'm Canadian. And we all help each other there. And we're just so fucking polite. Well, anyway, the next week, Kinison calls me and goes, Maurice, Rodney told me what you said. Rodney told me what you did. We're going to go to New York together, Maurice. We're going to party. Oh, oh, oh! And that was it. I mean, and history was written
for
Sam.
What a great story, Maurice.
Yeah, and unfortunately, in Rodney's book that he wrote just before he died, he gave himself all of my lines, and he gave Sam all the lines he said to me where he objected. Like Sam, as if Sam would sit there going, no, I don't know, Rodney, I can't cook in 5 minutes. Yeah. I tell you, Sam, I know you got a new opening bit. That new opening bit about the 7-Eleven, it kills him, man. Well, I don't know. You know, it's like, no, that's not the way. This is the way it happened.
I
understand taking the unknown voiceover guy out of the story, but, you know, this is the truth and my ex.
I love watching you adjust your fake tie when doing the Rodney.
I'm wearing a T-shirt and an open Gab shirt, but I've got a tie when I do Rodney.
Now watch what he does to do Bill Shatner.
Please. Don't tell me how to do it. It's so nice.
It's great.
It's pretty fucking good.
Spock sabotaged the system. Spock. Restore the atmosphere. Spock sabotaged this. I wish I knew what to do.
And now.
Oh, Bill, that's great. This time, could you just do it and have fun with it?
Yeah, have fun with it, Bill.
Please don't tell me how to do it. I don't say sabotage. You say sabotage. I say sabotage.
Now do Pierre Falk.
Sir, I'm sorry to bother you. This is very embarrassing.
He's still in the eyes.
I pissed all over my shoes.
No, I am. With apologies to Billy West, you can take any character and tell and say that
Billy
you pissed
West
on your shoes.
As Larry Fine,
hey,
go,
Mo, I peed on my shoe. I pissed on my shoe. Hey Mo,
I dropped the Pesach dishes.
Where's the Pesach?
You just have to make your uvula completely relaxed to do Larry Fine.
See, that's the thing is Maurice is not. He's so brilliant.
I have to physicalize though, otherwise the voice won't come.
So much.
Like I know I'm on radio and nobody can see that I can actually cross one eye to make it look like a glass eye.
It's amazing.
I have to do it.
Yeah.
I think everybody. We to get back to Frank Welker, the Welkinator. I mean, he totally becomes whatever he's doing. I mean, he's still the guy I look up to and go, I will never be that good, but I will try. I will try because Frank Welker exists. I will try to be that good. I'm no good at animal sounds.
I got to do a couple episodes of Scooby-Doo, which was fun, and Frank's still doing. He's doing Scooby.
Since 1969.
Yeah, he's doing Scooby and Freddy.
Yeah. How about that?
It's pretty amazing.
Well, and you know what? I got to say, because I don't have the on-camera background. I came out here ostensibly to do on-camera. I did a lot of episodic television just after The Last Supper. which, by the way, I was the entertainment. I was Shecky of Arimathea.
That's good, Shecky.
Thank you. Yeah. Jesus, what a party. And the only thing was, it was actually a nice party until until Judas got up and did that really killer rendition of Backstabbers. And, but anyway,
hey,
here through Thursday.
I love your story about your Mel Brooks story is one of my favorite stories of all time.
Oh, well,
in this business, just about
when you were doing Spaceballs.
Yeah, but this is actually it was a heartbreaking story, but it ended up being a good one because. And it was a great, you know, we used to do the looping on ADR on movies in those days, and they still do it.
ADR stands for Automated Dialogue Replacement,
He's
for
Canadian,
those who don't know.
You guys are
but
good.
But it's generally they would have like loop groups, and they still do. And these days, there was a sweet lady named Mickey McGowan that would used to get a group of us together. Mm-hmm. And I was working, you know, as Coulier says, I got to stop dropping names. Bob De Niro told me that.
Yeah.
But it was Phil Hartman, John Paragon, Tress McNeil, myself, Corey Burton, just an incredible group of people, and we were hired to add voices to Spaceballs, right? So I go in there, and Mel Brooks and one of the, you know, it's there, the dialogue editor, and Mel's coming in. He's going, okay, in this next scene, when Bill Pullman crashes on the sand planet, we got a, you know, these little guys in dinks that walk around with a hood, and they go dink, 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 dink. They're little midgets. We got a whole shit pile of midgets to put hoods on them, and they're walking around on the scene. Now, one dink is going to go hand Bill some water. So I got to have a name for the dink, because we refer to him later in the show. So I raised my hand. I said, Mr. Brooks, yeah, what do you got, kid? What do you got, kid? And I said, why don't we call him Gunga Dink? Now, I thought that was pretty goddamn clever for a 25. Gunga Dink, right? Water boy, right?
Of course.
Hartman pounds me on the shoulder and goes, goddamn, Rob, good for you, buddy. That was, Mel Brooks, good for you. So everybody laughs, and the thing cries and goes, that's interesting. What's your name, boy? And I said, it's Rob Paulson's son. He goes, Rob, I got to tell you something. In my business, wit is shit. Funny is money. Who's got something else? It broke my heart.
Oh, no.
I thought, my chance. This is it.
He was pissed that he didn't think of it. I mean,
you think so?
Yeah, I think whenever somebody, and I, you know, I'm.
Well, from that day on, I referred to him as Mr. Bancroft.
Yeah.
Really, exactly. Really got my, you know.
I don't mean to desecrate or, the man's a legend, but
no,
I think that happens in this business. People get, when you one-up them, that's a great line.
Well, but he asked for something, and I thought by the way, what I was going
to
say.
But he wanted you to Welker. Blue sky. He wanted you to lead him somewhere.
Somewhere that made him come
up. But you came, boom, you landed on the planet Tatooine, right with that line. So, you know.
You were mentioning Frankie, and it's on back at the Barnyard. I mean, you know, we had so many great people on that show, and when you work with guys like Maurice, like Frank, like Tom Kenny, D. Baker, Tress, Kath Soucie, isn't it amazing how incredibly gifted the people are with no pretense?
None.
No pretense.
Nope.
I mean, we work with people all the time that make me just go, where the fuck did that come from?
Voiceover actors, the heroes that walk among us.
Yeah.
You notice he left my name out of the note.
Oh, Maurice Lamont.
Because I actually have plenty of pretense. I have a very pretentious
about Canadian? Reno Romano, he's Canadian. I like him better than Maurice.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
I think you're Maurice.
Sweetheart.
You.
He's a sweetheart. No, I don't. I'm not.
It's true, though,
isn't
it?
Seriously, though. I'm probably the crankiest of the voiceover actors. I mean, I'm like in a field of nice guys.
No.
I'm the guy who walks around. I held in that for me.
You're my friend.
I was on the Young Comedian Special. What the fuck happened?
You guys.
I helped Kinison. Oh, that's my mistake. No, anyway, go ahead. What?
How do you? Because I only really worked on Barnyard, and every once in a while I would pop up on like a Batman or Scooby Doo or something. But you guys, is your day just like 9 to 5 running from place to place?
Yeah,
recording?
That's the deal with voiceover. I mean. You know, not to tell tales out of school, but you know, none of us is commanding $1 million a job. I mean, we are the, we're the kind of the unsung of the business. Every celebrity and their brother wants to get into it.
Oh,
you know?
Man, no kidding. Because of what Chris Rock said, because that's true.
Richard Dreyfuss and his brother Lauren.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, and they all want to get into the business, but because. We're not as indispensable, I guess, as an on-camera guy because he's got his face. Also, that you can't go get another guy to do Tom Hanks.
Yeah,
you only get
Kelsey
Tom
Grammer.
Hanks when you want Tom Hanks. However, if the guy who's playing the French Canadian Bird falls out of the job, you get another guy who plays the French Canadian Bird.
But you can't replace Pinky in the Brain.
No,
listen,
we've had this discussion times. But
I hope you're right, Chrissy. I'm telling you, bud.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they'll ever do it though. And of course, we're, you know, we occasionally will just tweet each not tweet, but you know, we'll text each other. And oh, God, wouldn't it be great to do a Pinky in the Brain movie? And you know, people ask us on our Facebook pages, when is there going to be a Pinky in the Brain movie? They just did a Yogi Bear movie
a couple years ago. Smurfs made a shitload of money last year.
Did it?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you work on Smurfs?
No.
I thought you worked on the original Smurfs.
Oh, yes, I did.
You were on the original one.
Yeah, I did probably 15 or 20 of them.
Who did you do?
Awesome.
Like I said, I did a pilot. Yeah, he was worked for United. Ba-boom!
I did a fucking pile of Smurfs. That sounds like drugs. I did a pile of Smurfs.
I did a bunch of Smurfs. I was douchebag Smurfs.
You snort them, right? That's why Gargamel wants them, because they have hallucinogenic properties.
And, you know, and Gargamel is April Winchell's was April Winchell's father. Paul Winchell was...
Why is the name April Gargamel?
April. No, I did. I don't know. 15
See, the
or
line blurs for me. That's
which Smurfs did you do?
I did a character. I did one of the last Smurfs.
Fuck you, Smurf. I'm only saying that because I can
that's
say.
That's right. Thank you. It just makes you feel good.
He was Weepy Smurf.
He was
Cunty Smurf.
Thank you.
Listen, there's a Smurf forever. There's a different flavor.
And then they spun off Snorks, which was like Smurfs Underwater.
Right.
And I did that. That was me and BJ Ward and Michael Bell and Barry Gordon, who went on to be Donatello in the first Ninja Turtles permutation.
Right. And the president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Right.
And you were Michelangelo.
No, I was Raphael.
You were Raphael.
I was Raphael. And you know what? In a strange twist of Turtle Fate, now... I'm doing Turtles 25 years later, and I'm Donatello on the new Nickelodeon version of Turtles.
That's so great.
Why not just make him
never
Raphael?
Been Michelangelo.
How about that? Isn't that the
Why not just make him? I don't understand.
Well, I know. And what happened was I got a call. I knew that Nickelodeon had bought the rights to Turtles. I mean, they even got the Turtle Van, for Christ's sake. They bought the whole thing lock, stock,
wow.
So I got a call about a year and a half ago saying, would Rob be interested? We'd love to have him come over and read for Ninja Turtles. And I told my agent, I said, well, do they know who I am? Not because of arrogance, but because there have been several iterations of Turtles between the ones that was the original that we did and now. And so I said, I don't want to go in there and be this old guy that they say, oh, shit, that's right. He was Raphael. Let's just throw him a bone since we got him here.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, I don't want to embarrass myself or them. And she called back and said, no, they know exactly who you are, only they're interested in having you read for Donatello. And I said, well, okay. So I got it. And my kid...
Now he's the leader of the Ninja Turtles, you guys.
How about that? My kid called... At 25 years later, my kid calls me. He was working on Tough Puppy at the time at Nickelodeon, and he called me up. He said, I just heard this rumor that you're going to be doing Turtles again. And I said, how about that? He said, Dad, you're going to be the answer to a Jeopardy question.
There you go. Exactly.
Which, how's this for a segue, which takes me to my dear friend, the Brain.
Ugh.
And listen to this. Remember a year or two ago when they had on Jeopardy, they had the two most winning guys in the history of Jeopardy play against Watson, the computer?
Yes, right.
All right? So I'm watching it, and... Alex Trebek, another Canadian expat,
yes,
says about my friend the fucking Brain. He says, actor Maurice LaMarche channels this guy to play. Channels Orson Welles
to play this cartoon lab mouse who wants to take over the world.
And the answer is who is the Brain? But Alex Trebek said your name on Jeopardy.
He said my name on Jeopardy, and
how about that?
And all of a sudden I was like, you know, Facebooked to death,
yeah.
And then the funny part is Watson, who got almost every answer right, had a big fucking question mark over Maurice what? Maurice who?
I don't get it.
Which leads us back to the obscurity of the voiceover.
You stumped Watson.
One of the genius guys did.
Was it Ken Jennings?
I think it was Ken Jennings.
It probably was Ken Jennings.
Who was the Brain, Alex? Who was the Brain?
Sat and went, yes! Actually, I wasn't even watching Jeopardy. I only found out about it because this slam, and I found it on YouTube later.
You were at the Melrose Baths at the time, weren't you? Getting a massage.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, you were getting all nerfy on me.
Yes.
That must have been fun because you...
Lower, Pinky. Lower.
I'm going to walk on your back, Brain.
Lower, Pinky.
I need to wax it.
Wrong end, Pinky.
I've often referred to my penis as the lower pinky. That's what I would call
the back 40.
The lower pinky.
Yeah,
the lower pinky.
Because you had a son when you were pretty young.
Yeah.
So it must have been
his wife had the son. He just stood there going.
Oh, you didn't have. It wasn't a male.
What did you say? Front poop.
Front poop. Yeah.
No wonder you. Wonder chicks dig you.
He stood there trying to pretend he was involved.
I know all of us know the terms.
They all just want us to go away.
My son now is the age I was when he was born, which is really freaky.
I know. Here's freakier. I'm the age my dad was when he died.
Really?
To within a few weeks.
No!
Oh! My goodness.
Yeah.
Bless
and,
your heart.
And to bring in Alex Trebek. Alex Trebek and my father.
Who's from Montreal too, wasn't he, Alex?
I believe he was, but he ended up in Ottawa.
Right.
And Alex Trebek and Peter Jennings and my father all worked at the same TV station.
Wow.
At the same time in Ottawa, Canada. How in about 1962. That, eh? That's, oh, yeah, eh? So Trebek, by the way, now your Trebek father's... and Jennings, Trebek and Jennings did the news from 6 to 6:30 on the English CBC station, and then they would pop out, and my dad would pop into the same set, and then that they would broadcast out on the French signal, right. And my dad would do the whole show, news, weather, and sports.
And your father's name was Jean Guy, right?
Was Guy, just simply Guy, no, Guy Maurice.
Guy Maurice.
Guy Lamarche.
Maurice Lamarche.
How's that for her name
and,
there,
and
huh?
He sounded like a dashing figure of a man. He left it after 2 years. He wanted to, you know, do something that really made a lot of money, and he didn't see it happening at the CBC in Ottawa. And, you know, Jennings, Trebek. I mean, you know. Look,
were you able to duck pigging the brain into French?
No, I was not. I've heard the French brain, though. He doesn't sound as much like... You know who sounds the most
French
like
The French brain
me?
Is oxymoronic.
Yeah, thank you.
Rob, the French are revolting.
Rob, let me tell you something.
Tell me something out now.
Wit is shit and funny is money. Okay?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bancroft.
Over to you. No, he was... what was your question?
The French brain.
The French brain.
Yeah, no, Francais.
The French brain sounds nothing like me, but the guy, the Icelandic brain, the guy in the Icelandic version, because Andrea Romano used to play
Oh, Andrea is the queen.
She would direct all the international versions of Thinking in the Brain.
She's amazing.
Isn't she the best?
But they do them all in 2 weeks. They do like all 108 episodes in 2 weeks, and you know, because they didn't have any union or anything taking care of their work hours or anything. So they would dub the show. But Andrea played me the Icelandic guy. He wasn't doing the Orson Welles voice that I did for Brain, but his speaking voice sounded exactly like my regular speaking voice.
Actually, he was doing
it. Or his brain voice sounded like me talking, except with an Icelandic accent.
And the Icelandic,
the
Icelandic pinky sounds like Björk.
Of course.
Fucking weird. Yeah. By the way,
I'm getting on an aeroplane.
Thank God, I have my swan costume on.
I'm getting this, very singing the praises sleepy of my time. To die.
Hardwick doing Bjork.
Wow. That was good. That was really funny.
You should have seen his face.
It was funny and frightening. It was funny. It was funny. No, it was frightening. I don't know what it was, but man, I just couldn't move.
Tippy-toeing in the reeds. Talking to the animals.
Oh my God, I love you so much. It's killing me. I have to sing the praises once again of my dear friend Maurice. Is that Maurice, okay, as brilliant as he is as the brain, and
stop.
As many people loved him as the brain, and they all listening out there, Maurice recently won an Emmy for his utilitarian super duper character work on Futurama.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
How about that?
Yeah.
So here's a guy who has established himself as the, which is, you know, an iconic role, comes back years later and now gets an Emmy for all of his other brilliant work on Futurama.
Well, you're very, very kind. And of course,
well deserved.
It means a great deal coming from my Emmy winning friend.
Oh, did I know?
Who won the Emmy for Pinky and the Brain in, what year was it? 1999.
And I forgot, we were at Madison Square Garden. Now, listen to this. This is a great story. My presenters were Whoopi Goldberg and Tom Bergeron.
Okay.
We were at Madison Square Garden at the theater, Madison Square Garden. And I was up there and it was, you know, my parents and my wife and there, thank you very much and all that. And I forgot to mention Maurice.
Oh, no.
So listen to, as I'm...
Why would you mention me?
Oh, shut the fuck...
I did
so
nothing.
As I'm walking off, I looked at Whoopi Goldberg and I said, oh, Jesus, I forgot to say, you know, thank Maurice LaMarche. Yeah, and she said, you can't go back out there now, honey.
That's right.
and again,
she had the same thought. Who the fuck is Maurice LaMarche?
No, not. She said, you can't go back. And she said, I love that show. And I said, well, thank you very much. But I was downstairs going, panicking, going, because I didn't want you to see it on the internet. So I remember trying to find...
There was no internet in 1999. Well, I was watching live.
Carrier pigeon. But I wanted to find a payphone so I could call Maurice and say, dude, I shit the bed, man.
1999. No cell phones, no internet.
Rob, fortunately, Maurice LaMarche is here. today in studio so that you can give him this long overdue apology.
Well, let me do that for you, Maurice. Now, in most cities, this would be called a felony. But what I'm about to thank you... No, I can't do that, really, can I?
Don't worry. You've apologized to me, I think...
I know, but I felt
semi-annually.
Horrible.
I mean, it's every time. It's not... You have nothing to apologize for. You thank your wife, who puts up with so much from you. And oh, Jesus, and Spielberg.
But I love you, Maurice.
I know he had something to do with that show somewhere along the line.
I love you, Brian.
And I love you too. You know, and the funny part is, when he speaks in a Cockney accent, I don't want to do the brain. I want to do Cockney back.
We start doing Derek and Clive.
Our favorite way to fuck around is to do Derek and Clive.
You know Derek.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when we don't do. People think, oh, it must be so much fun. You guys talk like Pinky and the Brain. We do Derek and Clive. We say,
what's the worst job you ever had?
The worst job I ever had was I had to collect up all the phlegm what Winston Churchill had gobbed at into his bucket by the bed. It was a terrible job.
And what about Sir Winston? Winston Churchill?
Winston was a cunt.
This is doing Dudley Moore.
This is what we do. We would do in between takes.
For those of you that don't know,
lunchroom.
The late genius.
We never talk like Binky and the Brain to each other.
Right. The late genii, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
Yeah. Oh, man.
We're not only brilliant together and did Beyond the Fringe and we're dear friends, but they would get absolutely fucking hammered and turn on the tape and do Derek and Clive, these two goofballs. And Maurice, of course, does impressions of both. But do Dudley. Oh, let's sing our little song.
Oh, dear little Flo, I love you so, especially in your nighty, when the moonlight flits across your tits. Oh, Jesus Christ Almighty.
This is why voiceover is so much fun. It's just like you have these things that are just in your head and between takes,
and
it all comes out. Like they should really, people should be recording
in
between.
That's the show.
The show.
George, this is the show. The show is what goes on.
But you did that too.
It's called In Between Takes.
In Between the
Takes. Totally. How many times, though, did we stop because sweet little Liam Allen Baker, I have such a crush on her.
Yeah.
Lee Allen Baker could not stop laughing because she was peeing herself because you, between every take, would do something that was so fucking hysterical.
I was just filthy.
But it was
filthy.
Great. Oh, my God. He did one where he just keeps going. You were doing some old woman going, oh, I can't control my... I'm pooping.
I was comping in for... Well, I do a little bit of a Kevin McDonald impersonation.
Oh, right.
And so I was doing my Kevin McDonald impersonation because Kevin was coming in to do Kevin. And so I was coming in Kevin because he was playing the voice of a witch.
Right.
It was like a gingerbread, like Hansel and Gretel thing.
Right.
And I don't know, for some reason, if I can find it, I'll put it at the end of this episode. But it's just dirty. People are going to hear it and be like, what? That's what cracked everyone up? But it was just me flying around. Like, I was flying around on my broom, and I was like, I'm raining shit on everyone below me. I can't stop this fountain of magical poop. But it just went on for, 10 minutes.
Oh, and Lee Allen Baker could not. She said, stop it. I was, pleating because her eyes were watering, and she couldn't get
it. That's the best.
That was probably a had-to-be-there thing. But if I can dig it up, I can dig it up.
But that is true.
Isn't that why we become comedians, though, for that moment?
Yeah.
Because at that moment, you almost feel like a supervillain. Someone's laughing so hard. Tears are flowing from
You're
their
fucking
face.
Their brain.
That's right.
They are exactly right. There's a special little spot in their brain that you are pumping so hard. You go, I have the power of life and death over you, bitch. One more hee-hee and your heart goes.
Yeah. Right.
Do I do it or not? Do I say the funny thing or do I let you live? I mean,
it's nefarious. So also, there's a lot of issues about wanting people to like us and attention things and all that stuff.
Of course. Nobody can hate you while they're laughing.
Right.
You know, and if you were a kid like me who got teased and beaten up because I was too tall, but I was also awkward. So I was that kid you'd think I could slam anybody into a wall, and I certainly had the physical power to do it, but I was too nice.
You're Canadian.
I was Canadian. I was in Canada when I was in that state, but I was just so, they used to tell me, you know, you're so big, you can't fight back. My mother would tell me that.
Really?
You can't fight back, you're going to hurt. Because the one time I fought back in the second grade, the kid smacked his head on the wall, and I was like, oh no, I'm like Kal-El of Krypton, I can't use my full strength.
Kal-El
so
of
I never
Krypton.
Ever fought back again, and they used to just... They used to tease me relentlessly.
Just so that reference that, makes me want to bully you.
That thing, of course. I'm a big comic book geek. You don't understand. When we go to Comic-Con, I am in hog heaven because I'm a fan. I mean, I can't believe I'm...
Well, you got you and Phil
Stan
Lamar,
Lee knows who I am. I mean, it's like...
But you and Lamar and Mark Hamill and all you guys
Hamill's
are big,
the biggest comic book geek I know. Same with Lamar. He's amazing. Yeah.
All you guys.
I love that.
You're a comic, kind of a comic book guy, too, aren't you?
I do like comics, and I do. I had Stan on the podcast once, and he's so fucking funny.
Excelsior! You should have Stan and Gilbert Gottfried on the same podcast.
Oh, they're the same.
Yeah, trying to figure out who's...
Yeah. Excelsior, the aristocrats, too soon.
I mean, you know,
I love Stan.
Who's talking now?
Stan's funny because he'll be self-deprecating and self-elevating at the exact same time. I mean, all I did was invent comic books. No big deal or anything. Like, you know, like
just an iconic character.
Nobody's interested.
Made billions of dollars.
Who cares what I have to say?
Isn't that great? He's the ultimate humble brag.
Yeah, he's but in the most charming.
Has he ever earned it?
Oh, totally.
Talk about earning it.
No, but the guy said,
I now get laid by chicks old enough to be my great-granddaughter.
No, it's crazy. What a life, my God.
He's really fun. Comic-Cons are fun. It's nice that you... You know, you're a fan of this. It's
totally.
It's not just a job that you're doing with animation. And anyone who can dig up Ninth Annual Young Comedians can see, like, you did a string of cartoon impressions. Like, it's clear that
I was a cartoon geek at the time, and I had not yet done an actual cartoon voiceover job.
You were.
I was a pure stand-up
comedian. Weren't you in Townsend on Inspector Gadget?
We were. It was our first.
With Don, you listen to your Don Adams.
With Don Adams.
Huh?
Don Adams talked like this when the microphone was on. Honey, we're going to get Dr. Claw, and we're going to spank him.
And then, as soon as it went off, he went into his, like, it was almost like the Jerry Lewis, you know.
Oh, right.
They kind of like limp wrist and cigarette.
Talking to Dean.
Yeah. So I remember when Rickles and I were chained to a wall, and we couldn't get through the take because we cracked each other up so much.
This is on Get Smart, right, Mr. Adams?
Yeah, on the Get Smart episode that Don guessed.
Okay, we're rolling. Take one.
Penny, where is my helicopter blade? Go, go, gadget copter.
So, anyways,
let me just
finish the story about Don. So we're chained to the wall, and they go to lunch and leave us there, and we're still laughing when they come back.
Go, go, gadget.
Because I remember in your Young Comedians Act, you did Tennessee Tuxedo and Chumley.
Phineas J. Whoopi, you're the greatest. Come along, Chumley.
Tennessee.
Yes, it's so fucking great. Don Adams was just that guy. Like, that was just his character.
Yeah. I mean, that was his impression of William Powell.
Oh, really? God, right.
William Powell or Dick Powell?
Dick Powell.
Which one? Who's the thin
William
man?
William Powell.
William Powell. I was right the first time. Right? Yeah, that was... He said, I'm just doing William Powell badly. He said, I've got so many bad impressions in my repertoire that they actually become original voices. Maxwell Smart was simply me doing William Powell.
And do you obviously, there's a huge tradition in voiceover of just sort of kind of attaching yourself to an existing personality, and then that sort of becomes a voice, like with The Brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Brain was, I you see, the thing with The Brain was, I went in first day, first audition. Probably the only time I've ever been on time for an audition in my life. Mm. And
sober.
Ish. Yes. He kids because he knows. I actually haven't touched a drop since Reagan got on the plane and went, bye-bye. Where are we going now, Mommy? That was the last drink I took. And I haven't touched a drop since. But it was this thing where I walked in, they showed me the model sheet, and I went, oh, isn't this nice? They've given me a character. This is Orson Welles.
Yeah.
I saw The Brain and thought it was Orson Welles. He was really modeled on Tom Minton.
If you look on Facebook,
you can look him up on Facebook anytime. Tom Minton, you'll see a picture of him, any picture of him,
amazing.
You'll go, oh my God, that's The Brain.
The freaking Brain.
But I didn't know Tom Minton, so I saw Orson Welles in The Brain.
Yeah.
So I just, and I used to be so fucking annoying because anytime we stopped tape, I would just go into the Orson Welles Frozen Peas outtake.
Yes.
Go ahead, Brian.
Just especially if I was all by myself. And I'd just be saying, we know a remote farm where Mrs. Buckley lives. No, you don't really mean every July? That's bad copy. It's in July. Of course, it's every July.
I love you.
Get
so
me a
much.
Jury and show me how you can say in July, and I'll go down on you.
He doesn't. Okay, he did that every
all the time.
Every everybody. This is mic warm up.
Between that and smelling of cigar.
Right.
You know, I'm amazed anybody works with me. I'd probably have twice the career that I have now if I just
no, but that
just, never smoked.
That speaks so highly to your talent, though, Morris.
Yeah, oh, so talented. Yeah. I'm like that. You know, I'm like the Oliver Reed of voiceovers. You know, yeah. I get in fights and all that. I don't get in fights, but I do walk in stinking of cigar.
Not anymore.
And I did drink at one point.
But he would do that as his mic check every time.
Yeah,
we know remote.
Mo, can we get a mic check from you? Why? I just did it right. Look, I'm not used to more than one person in there. One more word out of you and you go. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. I take direction from one person under protest, but from two I don't, sister. Who the hell are you anyway?
Excuse me, I believe we heard a slight gonk outside.
Jesus. What is a gonk? Do you mind telling me what that is, please? So I would do this. So I thought, oh, they've written a character for me. They want me to play Orson Welles, so I'll get it out of my system. So I take one. I just did Orson Welles. You know, he had this very super villain. He was more villainous in the thing. He talked about being like part of this club in the pilot. Thank you. You know, English words don't come to me so easily because old age is now my first language. Senior. So it was very, there was reference to Blofeld and, you know, as though these were his heroes. And then I just walked out and went, well, that was fun. And I had total confidence I was going to get it because they'd created it for me. And apparently, somehow, that, I don't buy into the secret or any of that stuff, but apparently, I guess if there's any proof that it does happen in that moment, I must have put out so much, you know, force of what do they call that?
Will.
Law of attraction.
So sometimes things just click, though.
Oh, totally.
And apparently they just aligned. Went. That's it. He's the brain.
But you know what? Like with voiceover,
and they had no idea what they were looking for.
But I never feel. I feel like they never have any idea what they're looking for. You go in with voiceover, and it's just sort of like Christmas shopping. Like, now I'll know when I see
when
it.
I'll know when
I see it. Yeah, and I think they do that. They have to. Unless they've got some very specific directions. Then I've seen them leave off that. You know, they'll say we want an exact match between. You know, pick any two prototypes, and then you hear it, and you go, "It's nothing like what they said. I did what they asked me to do. I blended." You know, Barack Obama and George W. Bush into one guy in the audition, and now he sounds like Reagan. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like whatever it is. But on that one, they stopped casting that day, and then they only read pinkies the rest of the day.
And I was told
and
that
then he came in the next day, but before he came in,
John Astin was their
first choice.
Being Pinky,
he was
with whom we both worked on Tasmania.
Loved him.
Wow, he was
that would have been a very different show.
And remember, we used to work on Tasmania. Maurice, I played...
Which was the un-Spielbergian show. Right. It was the only show to come out of Warner Brothers that the Spielberg didn't
do. And you played Taz's father as Bing Crosby.
As Bing Crosby. Well, son, how about we get together and have a little blah, 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 yakety, schmackety. Let me see your dog, son. The dog
Isn't
was a turtle.
That Animaniacs, the Animaniacs, it was so it was so refreshing to me because, you know, that... I mean, just being a huge Warner Brothers... Yeah, I mean, I was a huge Chuck Jones fan, huge, you know.
And it was an attempt to come back to that.
It was an attempt to come, but just the idea of like, no, the idea is that these characters are loose on the Warner Brothers lot. Like, that's such a weird, I love that it got made, but I'm so surprised they were able to pitch that.
Right.
Because it's.
Two words. Steven
Spielberg. Yeah.
Anything he wanted. They had done
Tiny Toon Adventures, which was, in my view, kind of like their homework to kind of get their ducks
in
a row.
And that was that was very, very Looney Tunes-esque. Yeah. In fact, they called it Acme Looniversity.
Right. Yep.
You know, and then I think Spielberg just decided, let's go further. Let's go with completely original characters.
Yakko, Wakko, and Dot. And they
created a whole backstory for us and history, and we were up Termite Terrace and... You're laughing. That's a good sign. Imagine when I take a handful of Vicodin. Jesus H. Christ.
Do you know how many people have come on and sung like the Capitol song?
Oh, and
the
Countries of the World. Have they really?
Three. Yes.
Oh, Danica. Hey, was it Danica?
Danica, yeah.
Is she the cutest thing?
I mean, amazing.
I love her. And she did that for me once. I was at a recording session and somebody said, you know, blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God. And I said, you know who I am? She said, oh, my God. I love Animaniacs. I said, well, God, that's so sweet. That's lovely. And she said, I want to sing the Countries of the World song. And she did it. She just sat there, United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, sang the whole freaking thing. And
what's the rest of it, Rob?
Well, let's see.
Do you know it by chance?
Let's see, it goes something. United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still, Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Belize, Nicaragua, Bermuda, Bahamas, Tobago, San Juan, Paraguay, Uruguay, Suriname, and Prince Guyana, Barbados, and Guam, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, and Finland, and Germany now want peace, Switzerland, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Italy, Turkey, and Greece, Poland, Romania, Scotland, Albania, Ireland, Russia, Oman, Bulgaria, Saudi Arabia, Hungary, Cyprus, Iraq, and Iran, there's Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, both Yemen, Kuwait, and Bahrain, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Belgium, and Portugal, France, and then Denmark, and Spain, India, Pakistan, Burma, Afghanistan, Thailand, Nepal, and Bhutan, Cambodia, Malaysia, then Bangladesh, Asia, and China, Korea, Japan, Mongolia, Laos, and Tibet, Indonesia, the Philippine Islands, Taiwan, Sri Lanka, New Guinea, Sumatra, New Zealand, then Borneo, and Vietnam, Tunisia, Morocco, Uganda, Angola, Zimbabwe, Djibouti, Botswana, Mozambique, Zambia, Swaziland, Gambia, Guinea, Algeria, Ghana, Burundi, Lesotho, and Malawi, Togo, the Spanish Sahara is gone, Niger, Nigeria, Chad, and Liberia, Egypt, Benin, and Gabon, Tanzania, Somalia, Kenya, and Mali, Sierra Leone, and Algier, Dahomey, Namibia, Senegal, Libya, Cameroon, Congo, Zaire, Ethiopia, Guinea-Bissau, Madagascar, Rwanda, Mayor, and Cayman, Hong Kong, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, Yugoslavia, Crete, Mauritania, then Transylvania, Monaco, Liechtenstein, Malta, and Palestine, Fiji, Australia, Sudan.
Fucking sweet!
Thank you. Thank you. And you know, there's an interesting story about that very quickly. When that was premiered at Comic-Con in 1993, we were on a panel with a bunch of different Peter Hastings and Rusty Mills and a bunch of guys. Tom Ruger. God bless Tom Ruger. And there was a woman in the front row dressed as Patti LaBelle as a Klingon, which is sort of
what
redundant.
What the fucking brilliant mashup.
Okay, yeah. Right. So she goes, I have a question. I say, yes, ma'am. If this is for Mr. Paulson, she goes, did you improvise that song? And I said, you know what? I did. And I wish I could stay and take more questions, but I'm going to record a song about everybody who's ever played Major League Baseball in alphabetical order. Shut up! You know, but no, isn't that song? And Randy Rogel wrote that song and most of the songs on Animaniacs. And he, I mean, talk about the stars aligning. How many times do we look at each other during that whole 8 or 9 year period and just go, it doesn't get any better than this, unless you're on The Simpsons, right?
Now, which you've been on.
Which Maurice has been on.
I've done a bunch of Simpsons.
Yeah, a lot.
Tress has been with the show since episode one.
Yeah.
So,
do you record with the rest of the cast, or do they
come in? I've done one or two episodes with the rest of the cast, and then there's been ones where they've just had me in to. And sometimes just one or two lines. I think it's just because Al Jean likes me, because there's no need to have me there. But God bless him, he has me in. And I think I've done 14. I think Joe Mantegna has got more guests, but I think he's the only. I think I'm like second or third most frequent guest.
Oh,
on the
wow!
Show. But for you, Joe has got like a character that always comes back.
Yeah,
Fat Tony. They just use me. I mean, there was one. There's one where all the serial characters, you know, it was called Serial Killer. It was, you know, Bart was playing this video game in the back seat. So all the serial characters are getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I was Admiral Crunchy. And, don't shoot me now.
That was Dawes Butler, wasn't it?
Dawes was the original. And I only do the original Dawes Butler, Captain. I don't do the guys doing it now. And then Toucan Sam, only they called him Three-Can Sam.
He is Toucan Sam.
And
you're fucking Toucan Sam?
That's the joke, is that I really am Toucan Sam.
Maurice,
for a second
for years,
there, I went, do I lose myself the job here, or do I say, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm the actual spokesman for this sugary product. Yeah. And I went, you know what, if I'm going to lose it, let me lose it. So I went, Toucan Sam, follow your nose. And he gets killed. You know.
How long have you been doing Toucan Sam?
I've been doing Toucan Sam since 1989.
How about
I'm actually creeping up on having the job longer than Paul Frees, who was the original, the second voice of Toucan Sam. Mel Blanc did one.
Really?
Toucan Sam.
Talk about auspicious company.
He did it like this. He said, hey, kids, it's new Fruit Loops. Oopray, oopslay.
And, are you kidding
and
me?
And then they...
Just you and Paul Frees and Mel Blanc.
And Mel Blanc.
How about that, folks?
Frees did the Ronald Coleman impression. Took the character and went completely the other way and did the Ronald Coleman impression. And then...
I love that. I love Ronald Coleman.
Follow your nose. It's always nose. Kellogg's Fruit Loop cereal. There, you got a freebie, Kellogg's.
Is that the coolest thing in the world? I love that kind of shit. I love that. I love you so much, Maurice.
That's, oh, thank you. I love you too, Robert.
I love
you
that. It's always so fun to... I think the biggest... big mistake that I made when I got my first voiceover job was picking a character to do and not
not going, oh, I'm going to have to maintain this voice every episode. It was...
So what did you do? Did you do this? Did you go...
Almost. Right. I did. It was a show called The X's on Nickelodeon. Oh, sure. Right. And so I went in and read for this villain called Glowface. And then I left the audition and I got right outside the door and I was like, oh, I want to try one thing. And so I went back in and I had this idea that I wanted to make the character like Wallace Shawn.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did a really loud, like, foolish X's, you will never... Like, and I just...
Nice.
But it was all screaming. Uh-huh. And then I got it, and then I had to scream every fucking episode. How do you guys, how do you keep your throats from going away?
After poor Mel Blanc died, they tried to cover all of his characters. I knew I didn't really have a good Bugs or Daffy, but I thought, I know, let me go in the side door. Let me read for Yosemite Sam. Mm-hmm. I've been Yosemite Sam in almost every project except for the feature films. Since Mel died.
Which
and
was
let me tell you.
No,
I think he died in 85.
Was it 85?
I think so. And I look it up on your iPhone.
I think it might be later than that. I think it was like 89. I think it was like 89. 89
when he died.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's it. But I went in there and I thought, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go balls out with this voice. I did exactly what you did. I didn't think that, you know, possibly I might end up with this job for 20 plus years. So hates rabbits. And I I have been doing Yosemite Sam and going to voice doctors after the sessions. Since the 1980s.
It's pretty fucking scary when you blow your voice out, like that's your job. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
It's killed me.
I was talking
because I'm doing it now on the Looney Tunes show, and there are times when I just really have to say, guys, I've got 3 takes left in me, and that's it.
That's what you have to say.
I would take constantly hot tea with honey in it.
Yep.
To just keep the throat warm.
Well, you do that, but there are times. There's a point at which, there's a break point at which you go, I got 6 Lexus commercials to do on Monday.
By the way, Maurice is the voice of Lexus.
Is not gonna,
Jesus Christ.
That's why I said.
Follow your nose. Follow your car.
Follow your nose.
When you give someone a Lexus, you give them every memory they'll make with it.
How about that?
Lexus guy.
Isn't that great? And for a long time, I was Mr. Opportunity.
And you were Mr. Opportunity.
On the Honda.
I'm knocking.
And who's to say they won't bring him back?
Well, I don't know. They got Patty Warburton doing a live
action
version.
Pat's only doing, he's doing the funny stuff.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I did it for 7 years, but it was still good. It was a great gig.
It was a great gig. No gig lasts forever. That's the other thing, you know, we especially in the voiceover world, we have so many plates spinning at once.
Yeah.
And we're lucky. You can't think of anything as anything that's going to last forever.
Barnyard was one of my favorite jobs I've ever had.
Well, buddy,
I never left there bummed. I was always
totally happy,
super happy every time I left. Everyone was cool. It was one of those like, I'm never going to get a job like this ever again. It was just a total lucky. The 3 years that we did it was so much fun.
It was fantastic. And I swear to God, man, and it's not just, as I say, it's not just blowing smoke. You were unbelievable.
Get out of town.
And it really is great to see what you've accomplished. Because, I mean, I had never had the pleasure of working with you. And I really saw this guy go from this incredibly bright comedian voice guy to, like, you've got, you know, Nerdist Industries and this, the podcast. And you're doing, for a long time, I thought it was, you said it's the Talking Dead, right?
Yeah.
That you're doing, because I thought it was the Caulking Dead.
No.
A bunch of painters.
No, yeah, that's a different show where you go in and they try to seal off the zombies with...
Okay, because it's on the House, Home, and Garden.
Yeah. It's Bob Vila. Bob Vila.
Oh, okay. Zombie Bob Vila. Yeah. That sounds like a great name. My friends call me Zombie Bob Vila. It's like a drag racer. Sunday, Zombie Bob Vila. You know, Big Daddy Don Garlitz.
You know what? I love hearing those classic radio guys that have been around since the 70s.
Beat your head with the
voice. Where just like you just hear, like, you hear 10,000 cigarettes in their voice, like that old radio when they would do the compression and you would hear that.
Larry Vanna. Or with the real Don Steele.
The real Don Steele.
Guys like, remember Byron McGregor on CKLW in Windsor? Did you ever hear that thing? He did a record called The Americans. And it was toward the end of the Vietnam War. And
Was that the thing that Gordon Pinson wrote?
Yes. And Byron McGregor did it. Right. And he goes, you get German technocracy and you get automobiles. You get Japanese technocracy and you get televisions. You get American technocracy and you get men on the moon, not once, but twice, and home again safely. And I'm one Canadian who's damn tired of hearing the Americans pushed around. Oh, my. Music playing in the background. It was great.
Yeah.
But I love that. You're right. That ballsy kind of smoky, brandy-y.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for a long time, and it's a tough gig, man, being one of those DJ guys.
I was always amazed at how high you could get your voice.
Yeah.
Your registers.
Unbelievable.
Especially for Peck. Peck
the Rooster. Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of, yeah, I mean, I'm sort of, you know, fortunate to have a little light voice. I'm kind of a tenor. So it was pretty much, I was a talking chicken. I like to say talking cock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, it's a chicken, Chris. What?
What? What's the problem?
What's the problem?
I don't know what everyone's all upset about.
No, it was, that was a huge thrill for me. And honest to God, man, seeing how you've just taken this to such an incredible level, it's really wonderful.
This isn't about me.
No, I know, but still, you're just in a hell of
I have
job.
To bat this away so I don't look arrogant, but no, I'm appreciating everything you're saying.
Our pleasure, buddy.
Believe me, I'm devouring it inside.
No, I mean, Maurice has been a guest on my little podcast, and mine is just I bring my thing and I talk to cartoon guys.
Plug it.
Oh, thank you. It's called Talkin' Tunes.
Talkin' Tunes.
TalkinTunes.
Mm-hmm.
At robpaulsonlive.com and iTunes. And we just broke into the top 100.
Nice.
Of iTunes for TV and movie iTunes.
That's fucking awesome.
Not the whole thing. But you've got the Nerdist podcast.
Oh, we just gave you
the
bump.
Panel.
You're going way past 50.
I love the Nerdist Writers Panel.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, you listen to the Writers Panel?
I downloaded that.
I totally listened to it.
Oh, my God. Ben Blacker's going to lose his mind.
It's fantastic.
No, no. It was amazing. It was really, truly one of the best things I've ever listened to. I would listen like. I listened to it at least three times.
Oh yeah!
Just there's so many nuggets in there. It's just getting writers together.
I would stop by Meltdown every once in a while on a Sunday. They would do those kind of early in the afternoon, and people show up with notebooks and they fucking take notes.
Sure.
Like it's like a seminar.
Yeah,
that's very. I listened to that, it was really cool.
Maurice was my first guest. I was doing the podcast by myself, and he was my first guest. And I said something like, "Oh, you know, I'm hearing this weird interference." I'll go check this out. I'll be right back. And then you said,
"Greetings, my friends."
People of Earth.
People of Earth. I have taken over the airwaves.
I can't remember exactly. We just improvised it at my dining room.
In your
table.
Dining room table.
So when I walk into this big professional studio,
this is way out of my pay grade.
Because you met Chris on Barnyard.
You've known him for 25 years?
My son was born, so it's under 18 years, but it was right around at the Howie Mandel show.
You were working on the Howie Mandel show.
I was doing the announcing.
You were the announcer on Howie Mandel.
My pal Howie, I went to high school with.
I was a guest. That was my first talk show.
You had a sitcom. You had a sitcom on the
UPN network.
The UPN network.
Homeboys from Outer Space.
Network.
The UPN network in quotation marks.
Yeah, exactly.
Hooked
up two TV sets to a VCR.
Small end.
Yeah, and I was just standing there grazing,
and he walked
at the cheese tray.
You did Dizzy Devil too on Tiny Toons.
I was
right?
Dizzy Devil. On
How
Tiny
about
Tiny
that?
Tiny. We're talking about Chris and his most sorry. Career.
No, please,
he's a genius.
Please,
and
two geniuses.
And you were just like so sweet to me, and I was
in awe. Telling you that ninth annual Young Comedian special.
Change your life.
It piloted, it so much of, you know, because I was a huge comedy nerd growing up and I always loved stand up. And that was one of those ones that was just like, you know, you'd watch it. And for interestingly, the ninth annual is the one that people always remember. If they remember Dangerfield,
everybody has it still a VHS
and it's just,
copy of it. If they've got it.
You know, just
they still watch it every year.
It's just there's something magical about that
it's
one.
It's weird because there were ones that, I mean, there were Young Comedian special that broke. Robin Williams. I mean, there was one that broke Jerry Seinfeld.
But the ninth annual for some reason
had just a heap and helping, you know, of with Saget and Yakov. That was the other
was
one.
Yakov Smirnoff.
Yakov was on there. Yeah,
Rita.
What did he create?
And that
big for
killer Kinison set. Not to go do the first half of the podcast again all over again, but you know, people and Rodney. Rodney was so much more than a host that. And who brought Rodney out? People don't know.
Regis Philbin.
Was Regis Philbin.
What?
If you know Rodney, as I know him, you know he's a man of generosity, warmth.
And then he's in the coat room with the coat check girl going, "Come on, honey, anything to go home with me. I'll give you money." You know.
God, that's... Oh.
It was so
good. How was Rodney just like as a guy to hang out
as
with?
As a guy, because he's dead, I can talk about it now. No, that was very, very...
No. It's
He's
I know
taking
what you
a big
mean.
Okay, go ahead,
Rodney was possibly the most generous guy, the most, and I'm not doing it as, you know, sort of a Jerry Lewis, Don Adams kind of cigarette limp wrist thing. Rodney could have is possibly the most generous guy I've ever met in terms of how he was to comedians and to me. At the same time, I didn't want to get too close and didn't want to take the approach of like we're buds now, because the guy before me lost the gig
really?
By doing that, because he thought he was such good pals with Rodney that, well, you know, we're all a big family here, so the limo's for me.
Uh-oh.
And he took the limo while Rodney was on, and Pratt took a couple of girls from the audience out for burgers in the stretch limo. And Rodney had two modes. He was like, he'd either stay around, you know, with the venue owner for 5 hours, or he wanted to get right the fuck out of there.
Really?
And that was one of those nights he didn't want to change. He just got off in the black suit and the red tie and wanted to go. And the comedian, I won't name him.
Come on, name him.
I won't. I won't name it. It's not Jim Carrey, though.
Okay.
It was my predecessor before Jim Carrey. And he wasn't back. So he lost himself the gig. So I knew not to approach too closely, but I'll tell you, he was so good to me. We pulled up to one gig in Latham, New York. My name wasn't on the billboard. He went ballistic. He went, what the fuck is that, man? Look at that. There's not. He needs billing. And he goes in and he says, I said, Rodney, it's okay. I don't mind. It was, no, man, your life is hard enough, man. You got to open for me and they don't know you're coming. That's no good. You know, and wow. Fitz, his road manager at the time, just goes, just leave him alone. Let him do what he's doing. And I hear him in there, and he's ranting and raving in his dressing room. And then next thing I know, it's quiet. And then Fitz comes and gets me about half an hour later, and he goes, come here. There's a guy up on a cherry picker. I mean, this thing was huge. It was like on the Jetsons. It was like on a single pole that went up into the clouds almost, and then a billboard. And he's up there, put M... Hey,
isn't that sweet? What a great story.
And I was like, wow, you know, he just wanted to be sure I had billing. And then he spelled LaMarche L-E instead of L-A, and I was like,
wait a second. No, that's not kidding. What Rodney. I'm Rodney. Kidding. Yeah,
Rodney.
Rodney, come here.
The kid's name's got to be spelled right. Oh. What the fuck, man?
Oh. So, new letters. Brand new letters.
Now but he was an
different
unusual
font.
Guy. He had unusual
Helvetica, goddammit.
Different font.
Helvetica.
Nobody knew what a font was except for print setters back in the 80s. Now we all know.
Everyone knows what fonts are.
Exactly. So, my favorite joke to play if I'm going out and if I'm, you know, out for dinner with a date, and the waiter says, "Do you have any questions about the menu?" I'll go, "Yes. What font is it printed in?" My date invariably laughs until tears are streaming down her eyes.
And if she doesn't laugh,
I have the power of life and death over you, bitch. I'm hugging your brain right now. But the other thing about Rodney though was the man was a terry cloth repellent. He had some sort of field around his body that terry cloth just would not stay close to it. And he could not keep a robe closed to save his life.
Oh, I would, you know, I feel like Saget would tell Saget that story. He'd go over to Rodney's house and be like, yeah, go over and look at Rodney's balls hanging out of his robe.
Exactly. It's like impossible. My mother came down to Vegas one of the times I was opening for Caesars.
No.
And she goes in, you know, and she just wants to, thank
Sweet
Rodney for taking such good, no, my mom was from Toronto, my father was from Timmins. And she wants to thank Rodney for taking such good care of her little son and giving him the job and all that. And he's like, oh, Norma, come on in. How you doing? You know? And it's a glass dining room table. He's got the big dressing room at Caesars. Oh, and he's sitting down, and the robe is coming opener and opener. Oh, can I get you something? Hey, Fitz, get Norma a cup of coffee, would you? Let me tell you something. Your kid's a nice kid. You know that? You brought him up good. He's got good manners. Nobody knows what the fuck that is down here, but yeah. He's a good kid, Norma. Yeah, you seem like a nice lady. And it's opening, and I'm seeing pubic hairs, and I'm seeing scrotum, and I'm going, Rodney.
Your Rodney mother is sitting there.
And she's just looking him in the eye because she's, you know, she's,
of course,
she's a nice person.
Yeah.
And I'm just like trying to like throw myself over this. Yeah, he's been really great to me, Mom. You know, over the glass table. So
there's stuff on, her on angle the ball
so
grenade.
I can cut it. Yeah, oh my God.
That was still one of the funniest.
I mean, every time I saw Rodney, I got to see Rodney's testicles. It was like two for one. I stayed at this house once.
Yeah.
In between gigs, we were doing, I think it was, we did Poughkeepsie, New York. And Scranton, Pennsylvania, and his house in Connecticut. It was a gorgeous home. was exactly in the middle of those two things. So he goes, Maurice, don't stay at a hotel. You'll stay at my place, and we'll take the bus out. You know, he had these big rock and roll tour bus. And sure enough, I get up, and, you know, I brought my robe with me, and I, you know, I tie it up nice and tight. And so I'm down for breakfast, and the neighbor comes, and his houseman opens the door, and he goes, yeah, you got something on your lawn that you got to take care of over here. And so, you know, I'll get Rodney. Rodney comes.
Oh, no.
Next thing I know, Rodney comes, and he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt and flip-flops and nothing else.
Jesus.
And he answers the door
in Connecticut.
Like that, in Connecticut, flapping in the breeze. And like he answers the door like that, and his neighbor treats him like nothing.
Oh.
And his neighbor is Robert Ludlum.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was so bizarre. His next door neighbor was Robert Ludlum.
Roy?
A half mile away because they had acreage in Connecticut.
But what was it, Rodney's Roy?
His real name was
Jackie Jake, Roy.
Yeah, his real name was Jack Roy. But his real, I mean, that was his stage name, but his real name was Jacob Cohen.
Jacob Cohen, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. He
is one
about
of
the man. He just liked to fly in the breeze.
That's so great to
hear.
His
boys need room, Jerry.
Please.
Oh, yeah.
Chicken pow. How about this? This fucking guy, every time, just, I love you so much.
Oh, no. It's a gift and a curse. It's amazing.
Well, you know, we've done this together.
Let's plug this.
We're going to be at the Emerald City Comic
Con. Oh, Emerald City, yeah.
Emerald City Comic Con up in Seattle.
We're going to be there at the end of the month. It'll be Maurice's birthday.
March 30th through April 1st.
And we're going to be there. Billy West is going to be there.
Billy will be there.
Billy's
Tara
great.
Strong.
John DiMaggio, Tara Strong.
Kevin Conroy.
Batman.
Yeah, I know Kevin Conroy is. Never met Kevin. I want to get...
Really nice guy.
I want to get DiMaggio and Kevin Michael Richardson on at the same time.
You got to.
Talk about a fucking whirlwind, those two.
Oh, and or Billy. I mean, I had Billy
on my
podcast.
Billy's been on, and he's incredible.
He's just nuts. And Willie and I did... You know, he's the only guy that's ever made me pull my car over when he was on Howard's show.
Oh, okay.
Have you heard him do his impression of Marge Schott?
Yeah, the Marge Schott
thing.
That's
vile. And it made me pull my car over. Because, you know, because he's talking, he does sort of, Marge Schott as a Down Easter from up in Boston, even though she was from, she would smoke like this in real life, you know.
Right.
But he did her as a Down Easter from a Bostonian sort of sound up there. But I can't do it because it'll make me sick. Billy's the only guy. Howard was interviewing him saying, so Mrs. Schott, what's the problem? That's the biggest problem about owning your own baseball team. He said, the problem is it's the goddamn N-word.
Right.
But it pulled me. I couldn't breathe because it was at the same time so wrong and so funny.
Right.
And I pulled over because he wouldn't stop. All the problem is all the goddamn...
And socially... Poignant, too, at the time. Yeah,
at the time, because they play great baseball, but I can't fire them. They need them to make my money. And Billy just made me crazy. And so he was on my podcast. You were on my podcast. And all these guys, all I do is just sort of turn on and say, hi, this is Rob, and my guest today is... And then I just sit back. And you just, like you told that story about Peter Falk and how you met Peter Falk. And
yeah.
I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
I told it on your podcast. I'm not telling it on Chris's.
No, but I mean, and
if you want to hear the Peter Falk story, you have to go to Rob Paulson's Talking Tunes.
Exactly right.
Thank you very much. How's that for a plug? But no, it truly is, honest to God, to go to work every day and get paid to do essentially what got us in trouble in seventh grade and work with people that you would choose to have over at your house.
Yeah.
And then get a check. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's great.
Oh, my God.
And you can work in your underwear.
Or with
a Hawaiian shirt and no pants.
Yeah, I tell you.
I'm all right now.
I tell you.
But last week I was
over Dangerfield. I wanted to walk in the studio and sniff my balls. I don't know.
We end the show by telling people to enjoy their burrito. Is there any way that I could get a pinky in the brain doing an enjoy your burrito at the end?
Yeah, enjoy your burrito? What is that?
Pinky, are you pondering what I'm pondering?
Well, I think so, Brain, but I'd like to enjoy my burrito in mixed company, so would you join me?
Absolutely, my friend. I shall enjoy my burrito as well, and we command you to enjoy your burrito when we take over the world.
Yes, exactly right. And after you enjoyed your burrito, have a big, healthy...
Narf!
You'll make you feel so much better.
Yes.
I'm the luckiest boy in the world. You like Sonic Bjork.
I'm the luckiest boy in the world.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Good night. May you dream a fairy swimming deep inside your mind.
His eyes are bleeding.
I tried to hit on Bjork once.
Did you really?
True story. I was.
What was she like? Were you?
This was in the old days when I used to drink. I was drunk and I was in a club in London and she was there. And a guy got in between us and, like, she turned away. And
wow. Was she pretty?
She was adorable, yeah. Really? And then the joke afterwards is that guy totally cock-bjorked me.
Cock-bjorked me.
True story. True story. That actually happened.
Good night, podcast.
That's going to make me crazy all day.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Visit audiblepodcast.com/Nerdist for a free audiobook download.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this, perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.